Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Selfless Love Talk Show with your host, Coach Chanel Buzz, and special guest, Genoval Henry. I am excited this morning to present to you Mr. Genoval. He is an amazing man, and we've only had actually two male speakers who have come on thus far. And so I welcome you this morning. I'm excited for what we're going to be bringing to our audience. They will be inspired. They will be encouraged. And so, you know, I want to start off by letting you all know to please follow the Selfless Love Talk Show. If you have not done so, that would be greatly appreciated. So welcome, Mr. Genoval. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Thank you for having me as a guest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am very, very excited for having you here. It's an honor to actually have you as a guest. So I know that you're going to have a lot to bring, you know, for our listening audience that will definitely inspire them, encourage them, and bring some awareness that we all need in this world. So welcome, welcome. And I would like for you to go ahead and introduce who you are, tell everybody who you are, and a little bit about you.
Well, I'm Genoval Henry. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, born and raised, Southside, Go Sox. I am a sibling. I have 13 siblings. I am the oldest living male in my family, boy. I grew up in South Side of Chicago, some simple, two parents. My dad was in the military, mom was stay at home. And, you know, we grew up. My journey, you know, normal kid stuff, living in the city, in a, you know, metropolitan city, it was, you know, it was different. I wouldn't change a thing, but it was, you know, I still think it's the greatest city in the world, but, you know, of course, how the world sees it is totally different. My parents did an amazing job with what we had and everything that they gave us. They gave us everything that they could ever give us. And, you know, I grew up in the church. My dad was a preacher. And I understood what faith and spirituality was at an early age. Regardless of who you are, I have friends, Muslim, I have so many friends of different spiritual and ethnic backgrounds. So that's one thing about Chicago taught me was that you're going to come in contact with different people in your life and how those tools later on in life that will help me. Well, I'm a transplant recipient. I am almost 4 years, March, I'll be 4 years out. My journey kind of started a while back, but I'll get to, you know, my little bio. I have two boys, two amazing boys, Zuri and Azizi Henry. They go to UTEP. Excuse me. They played at University of Texas, El Paso football. They got smashed last night, but, you know, their mom is amazing. Their mom, Camille Hampton, she is an amazing person for giving me the two greatest gifts that I think in my life, besides me receiving a heart, they're probably number one. They're number one. Receiving a heart was number two, but they are my joy. And just to wake up every morning is a joy. Like I said, my journey started when I was 14. I was a great athlete. Never been sick before. And, I got on this amazing journey, and who knew years later I would meet, you and Alvin. And that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, for me, I was playing ball out with my friends. We had just had a great game, and it rained and rained and rained, and I got sick. And I thought it was strep throat. You know, I didn't really know. You know, my mom didn't know. You know, we. So they took me to the hospital, and they was like, well, it's just strep throat, and, you know, take them home. 2 weeks later, I couldn't walk. And I found out what happened was I had rheumatic fever. So I spent about 2 weeks in the ICU. And then, oh, wow. You know, the doctors, I remember the doctors coming in and talking to my mom and saying how there was nothing else that they could do because my heart was enlarged and my organs were failing. And I just remember my mom crying. And, you know, I remember the doctor saying, well, you know, at that time, the doctor was like, well, you know, you have other children, you know, you need to take care of them. And I remember my mom, you know, maybe I was hallucinating, but my mom was just, you know, it was hard for them. And
mm-hmm.
I remember they were like, you know what, well, we're going to let you go home. And the next thing I know, this doctor came in. And it was the first time I ever heard what an echocardiograph was. She was a young doctor. Her name was Dr. Barbara Dill. And she came in and did an echo, and she knew exactly what happened. So pretty much my aortic valve was scarred due to this disease. And, you know, they was like, well, he'll never be able to play sports. He'll never be able to do this and do that. And I was just like, you know, let me get out the hospital. So I spent another month, I believe, in the hospital. They ran a series of tests. Let's just say medicine has come a long way because
mm-hmm.
when you're in a bed and, you know, you're at a catatonic state and you can't move and they try to stimulate your muscles, those little stem machines used to be needles. So they would stick these needles in me to get me to stimulate it. So it was, medicine has come a long way. Was it torturous? Yeah. But by the glory of God, I walked out the hospital. You know, my parents took care of me. But I made a conscious decision that I'm never going to be in that state, or I'm never going to have to rely on another person taking care of me ever again. And I just felt like after that, I still went out and played sports with my brothers because, you know, family and friends, you know, you might be sick, but they still competitive. You still like, yo, you still got to do this. And, you know, my dad was, you know, that's how he was. And I did everything and playing basketball and football and shouldn't have been out there. You know, I could have been one of those kids that passed away playing sports, went away to college. Practice squad, shout out to Russ College, actually played 1 year at Philander Smith, and just trying to be a normal person, but I always knew that I had this little secret. And I would, you know, anytime I would get like fourth quarter, I would be dog tired. First, second, third quarter, I'm good. That fourth quarter, I was done. So I learned mentally how to deal with adversity and pain and all of that. Come to, you know, go in 1992, I was at school at Russ College, and I just remember I was playing ball and it felt like somebody pushed me from the back. I thought somebody had pushed me, and I turned around and, you know, everybody was on the other side of the court. And so I came home. And I saw I normally go to the doctor. And at this time, I was studying biology and chemistry. And the doc was like, I think you had a heart attack. And I went to go see this doctor at Rush Presbyterian Hospital in Chicago. And he did my echo and looked at me. He gave me they did a biopsy. And I remember the look on his face when he walked in the room. And he was like, son, we're going to have to get you a new heart. I mean, we're going to have to do a heart surgery on you. And at the time, you know, I was dating Camille at the time, and she's a science, you know, she's a pharmacist now, but she's in science. And I was like, nah, I'm good. You know, like a guy, I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm not having no surgery. She told me, she was just like, look, if you don't have this surgery, I can't be with you because I think you're going to pass away. Because she would see me sleeping all the time. And that was a big sign of the heart starting to have issues. Because low energy, sleep, because the body's trying to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And went from there, and she convinced me to have the surgery. I had my first surgery in 1995. I had an aortic valve replacement. We call it the ball and chain. So I clicked like the, crocodile and Peter Pan. You know how he ticks? So everybody would always ask me, man, your watch is loud. Why is your watch so loud? But I would always laugh because I would never wear a watch. And they would always say, what is that? And I was like, that's my heart. You know, I had the tricuspid valve, and it was St. Jude's tricuspid valve. It was installed. I kept it for years. It did me well. My heart, one thing I could say is I was in great shape, and that really helped me recover. You know, I had my surgery in August. I was back in school in January. My mother almost had a stroke. But I thought I was the same, but I wasn't. You know, I had the energy, but I didn't have the energy. And I just went on to graduate, got my degree in biology. I got married, you know, moved to Colorado. Things changed when I got to Colorado because, you know, I wasn't seeing my doctor. I was still on my regiment, but the altitude, when I first got there, I kind of struggled with it. So, mm-hmm. you know, went from there, and then I met another heart doctor, and he was like, you know, everything seems to be going well. And then we moved to Phoenix. Got a job as a teacher. You know, I taught school in Denver, science. I taught chemistry and biology in Phoenix. Then I got a job as a working for Maricopa County Sheriff's Department probation. I was a warrants officer, so doing that, playing ball like every other day. I'm feeling great. And then one day I got that feeling again. I went up for a dunk and ran back down the court, and it felt like somebody pushed me again. And I was like, what? And then I thought in my head, like, no. And ever since then, I can hear my heart. It was out of rhythm. I can hear the ticking. It was not a steady beat like a watch. It was more of a fanatic, incrementic pace, like a bad cylinder was off. I could just listen to it. And then my wife at the time, she told me, she was like, you start sleeping again. I would sleep. If I wasn't at work with my kids, I would be asleep. So I went to go visit a doctor, and sure enough, he was like, look, you got a mitral valve problem as well. So all this time, my mitral valve had been, you know, taken care of, compensating for the, you know, the aortic valve. Mm-hmm. The mitral valve was getting tired. So they in place the ICD, you know, a defibrillator, pacemaker. And I had, you know, I've seen them before, and they put one in. Stayed in the hospital a couple months. I felt great. I had to resign my job. I went, you know, became a health inspector. Still had kids, you know, normal life, blah, blah, blah. Everything's going good. Everything's going great. And then I got shocked. I think I was sitting down somewhere, and my device went off. Shocked the mess out of me. I passed out. And we just went from there. And my Camille's friend at the time was a PA, and she knew this doctor. His name was Dr. Clyde Yancey. I want y'all to get that. Listen, Clyde Yancey. He later on became the American Heart Foundation president. He is now at Northwestern Chicago, in Chicago, as the head of cardiology. Black man. He was, look, I walked in there. He was like, he was more like a god, the way, and he just told me straight up, this is what we're going to do. We're going to change this. We're going to change that. I flew back home, and I told my wife we're moving to Texas. And she was okay with it. I started that regimen, and I got here in 2006. The day when we drove here for 18 hours. We had dogs, everything, in the, with the kids. I was sitting at the bookstore because I love books. I was reading a comic book. And I went to stand up, and I don't remember anything else. And when I woke up, I was in the hospital. You know, no, before I got to the hospital, there was books on top of me, and this old lady was like, are you okay? And they thought maybe the bookshelf fell on me. No, I fell on the bookshelf. And, you know, I could laugh about it, but it was, you know, I pretty much went in a fatal heart rhythm. I went from 60 to 280 beats a second, I mean a minute, which my heart was stalling out. It couldn't get any oxygen to my brain. So that's why, you know, we always laugh as transplant patients, which is known as, you know, we call it, I can't even think of it right now. We call it, what's the name? Give us 10 seconds. If you don't like the way we're feeling right now, give me 10 seconds. Orthostatic hypertension, you know. Give us 10 seconds, we'll feel a little better. And, you know, when I got to the hospital, the doc was like, I think you need a new heart. So I went to UT Southwestern. Brenda Thompson has been my heart failure nurse. I've been knowing Brenda since 2000. I met her in 2005, 2006. She's been like my mom, heart mom, since I've been here. She still works at UT Southwest in heart failure. I got to meet Dr. Drasner. Dr. Thibodeau, Dr. Amin, Dr. Moreland. I have a huge team of doctors and nurses leading us. So many people, which you know them too. And, yeah. You know, we went on this journey. It's been ups and downs. I've probably had about 6 fatal heart rhythms out of that whole journey. And then in 2014, pretty much, the docs was like, yeah, we're going to have to work you up for heart failure. I mean, for a new heart. Because I remember going into the hospital, you know, and they were like, your heart is extremely weak. I was already at 40%. I went down to like 28%. But my functionality was, the thing was, is that by my body being in such shape and my other organs being in such good shape, it was like my body compensated. But my heart was growing extremely large. Like, it was becoming, you want your heart to be small and snug. When it gets large, that means it's overworking itself. So my heart went from the size of a fist to, when they took my heart out, doc was like, my heart was about the size of a bowling ball. Yeah, I'd never seen a heart that big.
Mm-hmm.
So it was squishing my lungs up against my cavity wall. So that's why I would always have a hard time breathing, because my lungs couldn't expand. The expansion of my lungs, your heart and your lungs work together. So, and one can't be small, bigger or smaller than the other. They have to work as a tandem. So I got worked up for that. I mean, I cried like a baby because I knew it was going to come, you know, and I'm like, man, I'm too old. I mean, I'm old and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, I was going to get a new heart. So they put me on isosorbide, and my body, this wonderful body that God has given me through my parents, it has a way of compensating. I don't know how. My doctor always say, I don't know what kind of superpowers you got, but for some reason, it always has a way of seeing through and dragging me through the worst of the worst. But I was in shape, and this was 2014, and I didn't really get sick for another 3 years. You know, I was going through, I was getting sicker in 2017 and going through a divorce and all that. And I never forgot, I was, again, sitting at the table with my friend. And I went into a Faye Harwood rhythm. I just remember him holding my, waking up. And I had, he had my head, and I was like, what happened? He was like, man, you passed out. We got to take you to the hospital. That's when the doctor's like, okay, it's time. You know, there's nothing else we could really do. So I went on the, I never forget, it was my son's birthday. It was July the 2nd, and it was his birthday, and I went to the hospital, and I coded that night on his birthday.
Wow.
And they I coded that night. But, of course, you know, this little body of mine has a – they brought me back, you know, and they were like, okay, we got to put you on medication, because at the time – you know, we had the medication. I can't remember what it was. It starts with an M. We would carry around a little bag, and this was more like our gasoline for our heart. It would compensate and do all the work. You know, remember we had that port in your arm. I can't think of the name of that medicine right now, but I carried around this little bag, and that little bag kept me alive. I had a nurse come, and at the time, you know, I'm going through a divorce. I live by myself. It's just me. You know, I didn't have the luxury of a caretaker. I just had a nurse come in every now and then and taking care of me. I'm fighting five wars. I got to fight for my children. I got to fight divorce. I got to fight finances. I got to fight with my family, my siblings. You know, I got to fight with their mom. I got to fight. I got all these wars going on, but I got this internal war that's killing me. And I can't even tell you how I made it. I prayed and cried, prayed and cried. And then one day I was just like, look, it is what it is. For real. Either I'm going to beat this. And I think about, you know, my brother died when he was 40 of cancer. And I was like, okay, I lived 7 more years longer than he did. I think that's enough. And it wasn't that I was giving up, you know, mentally. I was like, okay, I thought I was tired. At least I thought. But I didn't know I had another reserve in the tank, you know. I was like, wait. But, you know, that reserve don't kick in until thing else is depleted. So with that being said, you know, I'm going to divorce court. I'm going to all this custody mess and going to the hospital. And look, I got my friends will tell you, I got a smile on my face every day. The reason why I had a smile on my face every day, as I said, because one day, oh, this is going to end. And ain't nothing I can do about it but fight. So I'm going down, excuse my French, swinging. So at that time, I was just like, okay, whatever. I could lose it all. And then one day my doctor sat down and told me, Dr. Araj, I never forgot. He's like, I know you got a lot going on. When we were in the office, he's like, I know you got a lot going on. And he said one thing to me. He said, you got to block everything else out. He was like, I heard you're not a selfish person. Because I'm not a selfish person. I believe in giving to everyone. He was like, you have to be selfish now. You're going to have to block everybody out but you. You're going to have to focus 1,000%, 100%. And it's going to be extremely hard because I know you. I've been knowing him along. He's like, you always giving to people. But you're going to have to focus on you. The only way you can fix this is you. And so I just went with, I listened to him, of course. And at first I was kind of skeptical because we had got into it before because he said I wasn't taking, you know, my heart serious. And this, you know, nobody had ever seen me mad in the office. This was the first time, you know, I stood up like, yo, who are you talking to? I mean, I was ready to fight then because I was like, well, I've been doing this longer than you've been practicing. and I'm fighting for my life. I'm just a patient to you. But I was, he had to get me to understand that that's where your reserve is. Because I've always been a fighter. My mom would die if she knew that I love boxing. And I would spar a lot. I sparred against Stevie Johnson with a heart problem in Denver, Colorado. And he folded me like a, he was a world champion, folded me like a paper bag. But I've always been a fighter. And it was just like he woke something that had been sleeping. And I had to, you know, I've always been a fiery. Most people don't know. My friends know who play with me or play ball or something. I am a fighter, friendly, no halls, barn. I'm trying to rip your guts out. We could be friends afterwards. But during that time, I'm trying to rip your guts out. We don't even have to shake afterwards. If we're going to shake, we can shake. But if not, okay, keep it moving. And that fire, I need it. You know, my mom is a very spiritual and loving, you know, people like, well, love can get you through this and love can get you through that. I'll be the first to tell you, it was not love that got me through this. It was fire and brimstone because I was pissed. And all those things that I had went through, it reminded me of, you know what? I have not taken me serious. I did taking care of my children. I did taking care of my wife. I did taking care of my family, my friends. I was taking care of everybody but me.
That's
and
good.
then when I needed everybody else, they fight amongst themselves. And they fighting me. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm the one that's sick. You know what I'm saying? Why y'all fighting me? I remember having a conversation with my ex and my mom in the car. I had to kick everybody out the hospital. The nurse told me, like, yeah, she told him, like, y'all got to go. Because y'all upsetting him. And it wasn't that I was upset. Because believe it or not, the more upset, and my doc, we always laugh. He was like, you know, most people when they get upset, their hearts start racing or this or that. He's like, your heart slows down the angrier you get. I've never seen anything like that. But the louder, people think you're very, very upset when you're speaking, your heart rate goes down. But because I'm used to living in that fire and that ice. So needless to say, you know, I started focusing on me. It was extremely excruciating because I love my children. Love them. Love my family. And as you know, my ex was the love of my life. And I was just like, let go. But one day, my friend, his name is Dole Moore, he's a preacher out of Arkansas. He came and sat and we prayed. And he was like, what is it that you want, G? Take it. I was still in the hospital. You remember, you know, I was in the hospital for 10 and a half months in the ICU in one room while people complaining about wearing masks, but that's another subject. Imagine being isolated in one room for 10 and a half months, which is kind of torturous, prisoner, whatever. And, you know, you guys went through it as a caretaker. You see what they do to us on a daily.
Yeah.
It ain't. Yeah. If my mom would have a heart attack if she only knew. So it was hurtful, but it was lovely and wonderful at the same time because I got the ultimate gift. I waited and waited, and I remember my friend praying, and he was like, look, Doc, I need you to forget all of this. Just let it go. And I couldn't let it go. But then I remember it was March. It was probably March 17th. I remember the doctors came in and he was like, look, you're getting really, really weak. And the LVAD, you're kind of older, but LVAD probably might not work. And I said, Doc, I don't want no freaking LVAD. I'm tired of this mess. And I remember he said, okay. He's like, you going to sign off on it? I was like, where's the paperwork? I said, I've been here long enough. Whatever's going to happen, whatever's going to happen. And because the LVAD would have been hard on me because my lungs were so beat up. So it's no telling if I would have really made it. He was like, but I think you got the strength to hold on. And I had never met Dr. Judson before. I was like, I've never met. Extremely powerful and gifted man, him and Dr. Peltz. And all my nurses, they're like family now because they were with me forever. They pretty much drug me across the finish line. You know, I remember Shay. His name is Shay. He's no longer at UT. He's at a different hospital. He's at a different part of the hospital. Shay would come in every night and say, what's up, buddy? We sit and talk like we talking about sports, everything. And we just sit there and talk. It wasn't just the meds. It wasn't about the treatment. It was about the people. So with that being said, you know, I got the heart, got out of there. I'm alive, and we just go from there.
So this
and I'm
is
walking
amazing.
Around every day loving life.
This is a journey, you know, that is an amazing testimony, number one. And I know that, you know, there are some deep, sensitive things that you touched on as well and how you were able to overcome those things. And having that support, it didn't come necessarily from who you thought you would get it from, but you were blessed to have
right.
that support that you needed, you know, from the doctor and from the nurses and those that were around your bedside, which is a blessing as well. Your determination to actually, you know, receive what the doctor said and then accept it and apply it out of anger, whatever it took for you to be able to fight, you did that. And so, you know, I am so grateful that you are here to bless the audience with your testimony and your message. Having a heart transplant or being a donor, period, regardless of what organ it is life-changing. Yes, it is an amazing gift, but, you know, people don't tell you the depth of the journey. And I respect you, again, and I'm so thankful for you to be able to be a voice, you know, your friend, my husband, who is no longer here, you know, you are a voice to him as well. And so as a wife, a caregiver, I just wanted to touch on the fact that it takes faith, it takes trust, it takes prayer, you know, and it takes perseverance, and it takes love to be able to support your loved one who has to go through this. And so, you know, we will have a episode two, because I really would like for you to come back. I really would like for you to come back so we can touch on, like, you know, some of the things that happens after the transplant, you know, as far as, like, medications and, you know, how much the medications to keep you, you know, to keep your life expectancy good is dependent upon these medications as well. And so there's people who may not be able to afford medications and, you know, you have to have a specific heart-healthy diet plan. And all of these things that you have to do is all within loving yourself, because at the end of the day, it does take for you to do the work even after a heart transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's anything you would like to ask me, please, you know, you can go ahead and ask me now. We're coming around 10 minutes. Of the show, so
I guess I have a question as a caregiver. I wonder, I mean, I understand the physical and mental toll that it takes on us. I'm wondering, as a caregiver, what is it like to see your loved one go through this? And that's a part two as well.
Yes, I'll touch on
that's
it.
That's one,
little
two,
bit,
and three.
We'll go more in depth, you know, on the next show that we're going to. I would want to say for a caregiver, what the patient doesn't know, because we are told, you know, early on that the patient, you know, is you are the patient. So, you're suffering and you're, it's like your care is out of your control and things like that. But on the aspect of the caregiver, we have that love and we want to support, but guess what? We can't help in a way that we would want to help. And that is like heart-wrenching for us as well, because, you know, especially if you're the wife, if you're the wife, you know, it's a little bit more intimate, of course. And then, you know, your mom, your parents and things like that. So there's different aspects for what type of caregiver you are. Okay. So one of the things I would say is that it's necessary to have more than one caregiver. So you need to have a main caregiver, which in my case would have been me, but then other people that can rotate out with you to give you a break, because caregivers need self-care as well. Because it's a very heavy, hurtful thing. You don't get as much rest. So you're almost like, even though the patient is the one who is feeling everything physically, mentally, the whole entire aspect, I want to say that the only thing that we don't feel is the physical part of it.
Mm.
So it's not our body. It's not our body going through, you know, the changes and everything like that. So the only aspect that we do not feel is the physical. We feel everything else. We feel the mental, the emotional, you know, we feel the heaviness. We feel it all. We feel all the emotions you all feel, except for, and that is physical, because an emotional can turn into a physical if you don't take care of yourself. So, but we're not you as the patient. So it takes, you know, that unconditional love, that selfless love, you know, to be able to take care of someone, your loved one, who is on this journey, especially in the beginning. It does not ever stop, but it does ease up. But, you know, in the beginning of having a transplant, prepping for the transplant, you know, the first 90 days of going back and forth for more labs and testings and things like that, that all takes sacrifice and unconditional love and support, because that's what you all really need, is that unconditional love and support, as well as being educated on the things that are important, the medications, the regimens. You know, getting out and having activities to keep yourself healthy, and I mean, just all of these different aspects. One of the things I wanted to touch on really quickly was the medication. So there are certain people that have, even some of the other transplant couples that were in there as well. You know, I had heard one say that her and her husband, who had a heart transplant, had to pay almost like $5,000 a month out of pocket for the medication.
Oh, yeah. I mean, meds are ridiculous.
Yes.
They are ridiculous.
So so there's all these different things about, go ahead, I'll let you go. Go ahead.
Side effects, not just getting the meds, you're paying for them. And sure, I always say, look, $5,000 is worth another year. But
right,
it's an expense. You know, we don't, you know, not just the meds, the side effects. We have meds that's pretty much killing us to keep us alive. We're pretty much like Frankenstein, you know, when you do organ, because you have to hide your body from your organs. That's pretty much what you're doing. The side effects, mood swings, psychosis. I didn't even know I had an episode of psychosis when I was in the hospital. I thought I was on the phone talking to my son. And he wasn't even in the room. And the nurse was like, are you okay, Mr. Henry? Who are you talking to? You know, you're putting you on the steroids. You know, steroids are a great drug, but they are awful to your body. Everything has a side effect. So in total, I probably take about 35 pills, a day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I don't have kids, because some of these pills will kill my children if a kid got a hold of it.
Yeah.
So those are the things. And then you guys got to deal with our mood swings, mood changes. I mean, we can take a med, and 10 minutes later, depending on how it hits your system, you could be sitting in the corner crying or just staring out from the space.
Yeah.
And then you have to mentally reset your body. Okay, let me close my eyes. Let me take a break, a five-second break. And then it's like, okay, well, let me continue. And I'm pretty sure it's got to be harder on you guys because you have to deal with that. You know,
yeah,
you have to deal with, like, is he just in a bad mood or does he take his meds? No.
Right. Right. And sometimes for the caregiver, you know, especially like if it's not anyone outside of family or a spouse or, you know, they tend to pour it out on the one who is closest to them, the one that they love, the one that is there, you know. And so, that's tough. It's a tough, you know, space to be in. But again, it takes tough skin and it takes to love unconditionally. You know,
mm-hmm.
and it gets better, but this is bringing
unconditional can only go so long. Now let's be honest. So sometimes you be like, "Girl, look."
Yes, and that's why I said it's important to have self care. You know, go out and do something for yourself. If you need a break for 2 days just to get your mind together and process everything, do that. Do that, you know, and sometimes, again, like, I've seen a lot of this in the hospital where some of the spouses would get up and just walk out, storm out and go, and then I would see them.
Do you know the divorce rate of transplant?
I learned, yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I learned.
People getting served divorce papers in the hospital? You know that?
No.
That happens? So,
it's just beyond me,
but,
you know, it's beyond me.
But guess
it's
what?
It's beyond me.
We're here.
Right. Absolutely. So I am honored. We have like 2 minutes left, so I just would like to, do you have any last minute words that you would like to share with the audience?
Well, first of all, I would like to thank you for having me come on. You are a beautiful spirit person. We met through Al, your husband, Hart. So this great journey brings people together. And I think people need to understand that, you know, my love language is giving. And I think people need to understand that it's not monetary. Sometimes it's just your time. And giving to another individual is probably one of the greatest things you can do in life. And I thank you for having me on.
I am honored to have you on. And we will be doing a second episode because I would like for our audience to also be able to, and I appreciate the fact that you did give some names, you know, some of the phenomenal specialists and things that are, you know, people that are out there. But the next time we get together, I would like to give some resources out, some informational.
Okay.
Definitely. Some resources and everything. Yeah, because, I mean, again, we are a community here on the Selfless Love Talk. I invite, you know, my special guests on because they have something to share with the world that will help to change lives. And that's what our mission is. And we support one another. We are a community. We, you know, encourage and inspire. And it's all about unity and empowerment for our people to make sure that we all have a safe space. So I'm going to just say, you know, thank you again, Genova, for coming on. And it was a pleasure having you on the show. I'm going to go ahead and pray us out. So I just want to say,
okay.
Father, thank you. Thank you for this day. I ask that you will continue to cover and protect and pour into us healing strength, Lord, and protection. Just make sure, Lord, that whatever our needs are, any and everyone who is listening, whatever the need is, Lord, that you will meet them where they are. We love you and we thank you. In the mighty name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Amen.
All right. Until next time, we are going to have an amazing day. I would like for everyone to go out, enjoy yourself. Please be safe. And until next time, we'll see you later. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.